Every Tuesday, we delve a little deep into the world of politics, and we do that with this fine, respectable young gentleman right here, Professor of Politics, Jim Jost. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Mark.
Look, this week we've got something very interesting to talk about. Of course, Nick Xenophon's decided he's had enough of Canberra. He's got to focus on now representing South Australia, or attempting to win a South Australian seat next time around. What, in your mind, has prompted him to make this decision?
Well, in political terms in South Australia, there's the political dynamics, the political situation is really interesting insofar as neither of the two major political parties, the Labor Party and the Liberal Party, are particularly popular in their own right. They have...
That helps.
They've had a series of elections over the past decade and a half where the Labor Party has managed to form government in successive elections, about four elections, but at neither time did they really win convincingly. And in fact, in the last election, the Liberal Party probably felt that they were a bit hard done by because they won the popular vote but couldn't get the seats they needed to form a government. So there's been a bit of disaffection. Plus, there's been, within the Liberal Party ranks over the past decade or so, there have been convulsions and leadership turnarounds and divisions, and the party's been anything but unified and hence presented itself at election times as a sort of patched-up body of politicians who may or may not do a good job. The Labor Party, on the other hand, also was in a bit of turmoil at different times, but managed to sort of hold it together. So you've got a situation in South Australia where the economy in South Australia is woeful. It's described as the Rust Belt state of Australia. It has little or no real industrial growth on the drawing boards, as it were. It relies to some extent on the federal government sort of putting projects together that keep South Australia on the map in some respects. The state government, that is to say the Labor government, has had a few scandals and problems. So the choices for voters between the two parties is between bad and worst. So
he's certainly seeing an opportunity there, and I guess to focus on his home state, which is inherently not a bad thing. Now, he hasn't decided, though, to go to a very safe seat in terms of his party, has he? He's decided, for someone that doesn't like gambling, he's kind of going to roll the dice just a little bit.
Well, yes, but he's a politician, and all politicians are rolling the dice pretty well every time they do stuff. But
you're too kind on them, Jim. From time to time, you are.
He's standing for a seat that he could have picked a different seat where the percentage of Xenophon voters, according to the federal election, as they map out their polling booths within the state electorates, the percentage of electors, there are seats that he could have picked that mm-hmm. where he had a bigger base of support. However, Hartley is not that unwinnable. It's a bit of a stretch. But it is also one which has hovered between Labor and Liberal over the several decades. When it was established in 77, it went Labor. The other thing is that Xenophon draws his support from largely the disaffected conservative side of politics, but also some of the disaffected Labor side of politics. So the thing that he has going in his favour is that when he won his spot in the South Australian Legislative Council, that's to say the upper house, a couple of decades ago, he was a bit of an unknown quantity, but he's rapidly established himself as a politician who managed to stand up for his principles without being overly dogmatic or someone who couldn't negotiate his way into various compromises in order to get things done.
He certainly has become, over those two decades, a big player in the game, hasn't he?
Well, certainly at the Senate level, at the federal level, he's also demonstrated a capacity to stand up for his principles and to negotiate some of those principles. He's demonstrated, I think, both federally and at the state level, that his political commitment and political mode of operating is far more, dare I say it, honourable than either of the two parties currently as they stand in South Australia. So he has the opportunity here to actually make some serious inroads, and I suspect that it's going to sort of be a third party in effect.
So with that in mind, like you said, South Australia not really that plussed on the two major parties generally. If he can draw his traditional support base from disaffected voters there, pick up that seat, which is not a strong seat for his party, that's going to effectively give him an extra seat at the table.
Well, it's going to be more than that, Mark. Let's be a bit more optimistic at this stage. He's running 20-odd candidates.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a strong possibility that he may be able to turn maybe half of them into sitting members, maybe more. There are 10 seats that are eminently winnable, maybe another 5 that are, including his own, that are possible. It could happen that he finds himself in the position of not just simply being a power broker between the two major parties, but that one or other can only govern with him in a serious leadership position.
We are certainly going to watch the next South Australian election with a lot more interest than we may normally give it. Jim, thanks for sharing a little bit of that with
Mark.
Us this week. Jim always joins us on a Tuesday morning, as he will next week, talking politics with us at 2NURFM 103.7.